Welcome back to Kings of Columbus. I'm Bill Landis. That's Doug Lee Maurice. Doug, we're switching it up on people. I don't mean to make them too alarmed, but as you just said before we started recording, you're giving me the ball on this here episode.
I like to think of it as, sometimes a point guard wants to play off the ball a little bit, right? Just run through some screens, get in the corner, take some jumpers. So I got to tell you, I like having the ball in my hands, but I could use a little breather. And you know, frankly, the audience could use a breather. They've had a lot of me the last two episodes because you haven't been here. So the voluptuous sounds of Philly Billy were a welcome relief for everyone here.
Yeah, I'm more of a screen setter, so I don't know in podcast dynamics. I don't really know how that works, but
no, you're like Jokic. You're like a big guy who can handle and like fine cutters and stuff. So we're good. We're good.
Yeah,
I am okay. Not gonna cut though. I'm not going to cut. I'm going to stand in one spot and go like this. Bill, 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 whoa, whoa. Bill, whoa, whoa. Bill, Bill.
That's fine.
Big
That's
shock. Fine.
We'll find you. Yeah.
And then once you pass it to me, I'm not passing it back.
No, of course not. Why would you?
A ball.
One pass is all you need. I'm sorry. One ball is all you need. So Ryan Day had a press conference on, what's today? Tuesday. And Doug wasn't there. So I because he was working on Kings of the North stuff. He's got a lot of things going on.
I watched.
You watched. You watched. But you weren't there to ask your questions, I think. But you know the gist of what Ryan Day said. We had some snap judgments on that. If you want to check those out on the podcast feed on YouTube or in your podcast feed of choice. But I developed a couple of takeaways, I think, from what we heard from Ryan Day. So I think what we're going to do in this episode is I'm going to throw some of them Doug's way to kind of see whether or not he agrees or disagrees, whether or not we're kind of on the same page with stuff. And then at the end, we'll do what you watch and what you think and what you eat. So the first thing, Doug, which I don't think we've talked about on Kings of Columbus. We've certainly talked about it a lot on the podcast feed on, you know, dailies and snap judgments and those things, is Tony Alford leaving Ohio State for Michigan. And Ryan Day was asked a couple different questions about it on Tuesday and frankly did not give a whole lot of information about it. Like they're in the process of finding his replacement. He's interviewing people. He has interviewed people. He's going to interview people. Sounds like they want resolution by the end of this week. I thought it was interesting that he said he wants the running backs to be a part of that, to have some face time with those candidates, if it's at all possible, I guess like via Zoom. I can't imagine running backs coaches are flying to Columbus to interview in person for this job. Sidestepped a lot of them, like the Michigan specific stuff, which I did find interesting. Aside from like the Ohio State coach leaving for Michigan, huge deal. Ohio State like having to replace its running backs coach in the middle of spring practice, while odd, I don't think is like that big of a deal, right? I don't think this is a holy crap, what are they going to do kind of moment. Like, and if Tony Alford had decided to leave Ohio State to go to Nebraska, I don't know if we'd be giving it as much oxygen as we've been giving it the last week. So I guess let's like try to separate the Michigan of it from like the actual like mechanics of coaching the team. And like when it comes to the mechanics of coaching the team, like where are you on 1 to 10? This is a colossal deal that Ohio State has to replace its running backs coach in the middle of March.
Probably a 4, right?
Yeah.
And that idea. But it was one of those again of like, what a wonderful time for Ryan Day to not be in charge of the offense.
Yeah.
Because when he was like, I'm the running back coach. And it's like, oh, how is it that you can do that? Because you are not single-handedly running every single offensive meeting. Okay, great. So I thought like that was sort of like the whole point. And it feels like to me, and I'm trying to think of specific examples, and I don't know that there is one, but it feels like to me like the kind of thing that like Kirby Smart would do. It's like, hey, did you hear Georgia's tight ends coach left? What happened? Kirby Smart coached tight ends for 10 days and loved it. Hey, what did you hear what happened at Bama a couple years ago? Their safeties coach got wooed away. What happened? Nick Saban got back in the DB room and took over and loved it. Like that, Chip Kelly said it.
Yeah.
Their quarterbacks coach at UCLA left during bowl season. What happened? Chip Kelly became a position coach again. But you have to have flexibility and freedom and not the entire burden of the whole team and the whole offense on your shoulders to allow you to do that. So that was maybe my favorite part of it, of like, this is what happens when you hire someone like Chip Kelly and you're able to pass that off. And so then the rest of it, and again, it's one of those things at Ohio State, it's like, well, what are you going to do? It's like, I don't know, every running backs coach in the country is a candidate? Like, is that even, is that not true? Every single running backs coach, except Tony Alford. Although, frankly, if Ryan Day was like, Tony, he might come back. So,
I don't know about that one, but yeah.
You know, like, so that part of it, and that's one of those positions, not to diminish running backs, but when you have veteran guys like that, and Trevion Henderson knows how to get a handoff and hit a hole, and so does Quinshon Judkins. So they'll be good. And I don't think, you know, I think always weird timing. The worst part about weird timing is, does it limit your candidate pool? But with what Ohio State is and what Ohio State pays and the opportunity that Ohio State provides, I do not think the candidate pool is limited.
No, it doesn't seem like it is. We've talked about some of the names, like, you know, Robert Gillespie at Alabama is one. DeMarco Murray at Oklahoma is one that we've kind of heard and discussed. Like, I honestly don't know really where it's going to go. All I know is that, to your point, like, Ryan Day is going to try to find the best running backs coach in the country to come here, and Ohio State should have the means to land that person. So I'm not really concerned about that. I think you feel a little bit for, like, James Peoples and Sam Williams Dixon, like, who just got here and lost their coach, right? Like, I think that is a very different dynamic than Trevion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, even Dallin Hayden.
And that's how Tony Alford got here, because Stan Drayton left the day after signing day, and Mike Weber was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, so again, that idea, unfortunately, it's not the first time and it's not the last time that a player will be like, hey, you're my football dad. My mom said you're going to take care of me. You're left. What? But that's the nature of the beast. And so from that, it's worth saying, but also, sorry, but
yeah,
like, it's cutthroat, baby.
It is. And it's probably, like, it's probably more impactful on a kid like James Peoples, who's pretty far from home. Like, Sam Williams Dixon is from around the corner, so that's probably different there too. Did you watch the press conference or just listen to it?
Watched it. What did I watch it on? I watched it on what's that place called? The Podcast?
All right. It's live stream is available every time Ryan Day's at the podium at the podcast on YouTube.
Even Berm, the Berm was zoomed out, and then someone in the YouTube chat comments was like, Berm, can you zoom in? And he zoomed in. And it's like, that is full service.
Berm's right there. Like, if you ever want to, if you want to direct the show, basically, just drop a comment and Berm's right there watching them all, and he'll do whatever you say. I don't know that I've ever seen Ryan Day smile wider than when he was asked about, like, hey, how fun was it to coach the running backs? It was like, it's like for 1 week. And now I get, like, he's simultaneously, like, trying to find Tony Alford's replacement. And maybe it's not even 1 week. Maybe it's like for the 90 minutes on the field and however many minutes they are in the meeting room, he can, like, stop being a head coach for a little bit and, like, just be the running backs coach. And he seemed, like, very happy with that. Like, and it almost made me feel good for him. It's like, I know your job is chaotic. You get paid handsomely for it. But, like, you know, to, like, kind of take a step back from it and just sort of do football things as a running backs coach. It's like, yeah, I'm glad you get to scratch that itch for a couple of days.
Sometimes the way head coaches talk about this stuff, you want to say, you know, you used to have that as your job. And then you know what you wanted? You wanted money and power. Money. So you did this to yourself. You know who's happy? Lifelong position coaches. Super happy. Except when their head coaches are yelling at them and make them stay until 3 o'clock in the morning, making them cancel cruises with their family because they have to stay and work in the summer. But other than that, extremely happy. But yeah, I mean, it's what I'm too successful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole, right? So lucky for me, lucky for you, right? We've never been. Now, you are the content manager here at the podcast, so you have some oversight responsibility. Yeah. But fortunately, like, for me, nobody has ever decided to give me any power beyond here's our microphone, ding dong. So I guess if someday I'm in a corporate boardroom saying, spend that $1 million, I'd be like, man, I wish I could be in front of a microphone right now. That'd feel good.
All right. One other thing Ryan Day was asked about Tony Alford going to Michigan was the idea of, like, Tony Alford taking state secrets to Ann Arbor. What do you make of that? Like, is that a thing? Because I don't think it's a thing.
It was like a double-barreled shotgun of Dave Biddle with, like, did he steal secrets? And Nathan Baird saying, do you feel betrayed? And I was like, he's pinned. That's a 10. He's knocked out on that. So I say this coming from the standpoint of, when Ohio State hired Greg Madison, I asked like 10 questions that were like, why are you here? He came from Michigan because Ohio State hired, when Ryan Day took over, he hired Al Washington and Greg Madison from Michigan. And Al Washington is, his dad played for Ohio State. He's from Columbus. He had coached at Cincinnati. He was at Michigan because it was a good job for like a scooch. And then he came to Ohio State. It's like, okay, like that's, but Greg Madison had been like in the Harbaugh family. Like Greg, mm-hmm. Greg Madison was like a, right. Although he'd worked with Urban too, but like he was a real Michigan dude. And I was very much like, you can't just show up here. What are you? This is not how this works. This is not allowed. Tony Alford, 9 years at Ohio State, an Ohio guy, right? Like Earl Bruce at Colorado State. Like this, this is like, there are a lot of connections here. So I think that's real. I do. Like I do. Sometimes I think I don't want to be on the record as saying like people or anybody can go overboard with the Ohio State Michigan rivalry.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that. Please don't clip that out. Mike's going to clip that out and be like, this is what Doug said. Put that out. We'll jack up the views. Sometimes on Kings of Columbus, like if Berm comes in with a show, like Berm's talking recruiting and he puts it too close to our show, Kings of Columbus gets squashed. Me saying people go overboard on the rivalry through the roof. So maybe keep that in. I do think that's real. Like I do, like this is, you know, and I was talking to some people like kind of when it went down that like were like raised, like people in the business who were sort of raising an eyebrow. Like, is this real? I do think there are some people. Let me ask you this. Do you believe there are some people who coached and or played at Ohio State who would not take a job at Michigan no matter how good it was?
I think the majority of people who are involved on it on either side, and honestly, probably a little more on the Ohio State side, would never take a job at the other school.
Especially, it's not a promotion.
Yeah.
Unless, and I think we're parsing here a little bit, like, right, run game coordinator, would it feel like maybe Tony Alford believes he will have more input and responsibility, even if it's really still a position coach job? So, I think that's something. And I don't think it means that like Tony Alford is a spy and like a bad person, but I think he in that situation allowed himself to do something that not everybody in the same situation would have been able to do or have chosen to do. Or they say, well, there's 132 teams I'd go work for, but there's one I wouldn't. But in hindsight, or maybe even in the moment, even maybe before it happened, do people think maybe that the Tony Alford experience at Ohio State had run its course to some degree and that is part of it?
I mean, 9 years is a long time, and it certainly wasn't 9 years of awesomeness, right? There were some excellent years in there, but there were some years where the running back position was not as good as it should be. Definitely some recruiting cycles where Ohio State didn't get the players. It should have gotten. So like I don't think Tony Alford leaves like with an A grade from his time at Ohio State. And if you don't have an A and you've been around for that long, then maybe it has run its course a little bit. I also think Tony Alford too, like very clearly wants to be a head coach, has like, you know, harbored those aspirations for a long time. And I do wonder if you try a couple times and you don't get a head coaching job, do you feel like you need to branch out a little more, get more responsibility to your point, and maybe you become a more attractive head coaching candidate. I don't know. Like I haven't talked to Tony Alford to know what his motivations are. I don't know when Tony Alford will talk to reporters about that and how open he will be willing to be if and when he does. So I don't want to say that like that was his motivation for leaving. When like a lot, honestly, like it kind of feels a little bit vindictive to me. It's like if the writing was on the wall a little bit that like Ohio State at least had been pondering a running backs coach change and ultimately decided not to do it. But then Tony Alford like gets this opportunity from the rival that, you know, comes with more money, more responsibility, more guarantees in the contract. Like, I don't know. So some degree of it feels spiteful to me to like say, yes, I'm going to go do that right now.
So I was just double checking here, and I think people know that I did a big story on mm-hmm. Tony, or maybe they don't know. It's like, oh, people read everything I've ever written, so everybody knows this. Yeah. Two Father's Days ago, when I was at Cleveland.com, I did a really big story on Tony Alford and his family and the people he had been a father figure to in his life. It was like I was taking my daughter on a college tour, like right before I was writing it. And we were in Williamsburg, Virginia, because we were visiting William and Mary. Mm-hmm. And we were in like an old, ye old, like blacksmith shop or whatever. And like J.K. Dobbins called me, because I've been trying to get J.K. Dobbins to talk about Tony Alford. And I had to like leave the blacksmith shop and go out in the old backyard to talk to J.K. Dobbins for the story. So anyway, his youngest child is a senior in high school and is going to play football at Butler next year. Mm-hmm. And once the nest is empty, all bets are off. So Tony Alford is in his mid-50s, I think. I think a couple years ago, he was very interested in the Colorado State head coaching job. I don't think he got a ton of consideration for it. And now once you have raised your children and now you're back to the point of like, okay, like this is maybe my last chance to sort of focus on my career. And where am I? Am I positioned to ever get a head coaching job with where I am, especially in a world where you're the running backs coach, but Justin Fry has had a lot of run game responsibility. Kevin Wilson previously had a lot of run game responsibility. Kevin Wilson leaves. And then now Chip Kelly's here. And Chip Kelly, all we talk about since Chip Kelly got here is Chip Kelly in the run game. And I think it feels like I'm not going to get more responsibility. I'm not going to get more input. That's not going to help me get a head coaching job. Have I plateaued here? And he also didn't get an extension. He was one of two and I'm sure you guys talked about that. Didn't have an extension, which is sort of wasn't an alert, but raised the eyebrow a little bit.
Sure.
So in that world where you don't have to worry about moving your kids when they're in high school, now you say, how can I get where I ultimately want to go? This is my last shot. It's a little bit why I took this job. It's your last shot to try to maybe try something. And the national champs want to hire you. Like, I think in that situation, I don't think it's that Tony Alford didn't think the rivalry is serious and didn't, you know, dislike Michigan when he was here or maybe his whole life. But now in this situation, it's Tony time. It's Tony and his wife. It's their time, right? The kids are raised. The kids are out of the house. They're the national champs, and maybe initially, right? So maybe there's if you think maybe it's a little bit of like, I don't know if spiteful is quite the right word, but like, hey, Ohio State's not giving me anything more, right? Mm-hmm. So okay, well, these guys, the national champs that have beaten Ohio State 3 straight times, they want to give me more. Okay. So I think there's a lot of factors at play that go into it. And yep. I think it's absolutely appropriate for Ohio State fans to be upset if Ohio State fans like dead to me. I get it. But I think he knows that. But he decided it's worth it to take this shot because you only have so many opportunities in your career.
Yeah. I wonder what the sentiment among players is, because it was interesting to me. Like, there were some players on Twitter who like tweeted like eyeball emojis or tweeted some stuff, but I nobody in the running back room did. And like that, like guys on the roster can say that. I know that Tony Alford had relationships with guys outside of the running backs. He was like an area recruiter from Northeast Ohio. I think he had pretty strong relationships with a lot of guys outside of his room.
I think G Scott and Tony
are G Scott tight. For sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So like I wonder how that weighed on him at all when he was like making the decision.
Yeah.
I guess my point of view on it is like, I probably would agree with him that he probably plateaued at Ohio State. I think it actually makes sense to want to go find a new opportunity. It's hard to turn down the national champs. I understand that, but like Michigan, you couldn't go through this year, had a really good year with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, and then like go literally anywhere else after the season if you thought you had plateaued at Ohio State. Like, that's the part to me. It's like a little,
yeah. I don't know. And I think that's right. And I do wonder, and there was some good discussion with Ryan Day about like, hey, if you wanted Chip Kelly so much, why did you give it to Bill O'Brien first? When Bill O'Brien got hired here, we weren't talking about the run game. We were talking about Bill O'Brien, the quarterback guy, right? So I even wonder, right? It's like, if you're thinking about it, I mean, he had to have been thinking about it, right? Is there, has my time run its course here? And then Chip Kelly, and it's like, why the timing here? Then Chip Kelly comes in, and it's like, okay. So now, because really, I think there had been a real division of labor in that offensive room of like, it's kind of like the passing game guys and the running game guys. And again, Kevin Wilson was more the running game guy. He was gone last year, but Justin Fry was the running game guy. I don't know. And that, but now you're adding Chip Kelly and it's like now, okay. So I do think that may have contributed to the timing. And maybe if Bill O'Brien was the OC, maybe Tony wouldn't have left. So, and this is not, I've tried to talk to Tony. I've not talked to Tony since this happened. So this is not like I'm not secretly saying what he said. So just theorizing about stuff, but absolutely appropriate for Ohio State fans to be super ticked. So
yeah. Yeah. And Ryan Day 2B2, even if he didn't necessarily wear that emotion on his sleeve on Tuesday.
What do you think about, right? The implication from people is like, did he know he was going to Michigan while he was still in the building at Ohio State? And yeah. Was he like running around like in a spy movie, right? Remember like in spy movies when everybody would be like, I have a tiny camera. And now it's just like, it's your phone, man. Spies.
Everyone has a tiny camera.
Yeah. It's like, oh, cool. Wow. Like in the 70s, it's like, man, I wish I could be a spy so I could have a tiny camera. So, I mean, but like, so let's play this. So you're Tony Alford. You have an idea that you're leaving. Would you tell Michigan everything you know about Ohio State? Or would you ward off part of your knowledge? Not that you would even say to Michigan, I'm not going to tell you everything I know. But if they said like, hey, what about this? You'd be like, ah, oh, I don't, ugh. You know? Like, would you feel any guilt about your inside knowledge of Ohio State even helping Michigan 1%? Or would it be like, they're paying me now, they get it all?
Yeah, no, I think I would say they're paying me now, they get everything I know. I am now, my job is to now help Michigan win football games. So whatever I can do to that, I'm going to do. And I hope that would be Ohio State fans' expectation if the roles were reversed, right?
Yeah, no, I guess, yeah. Greg Madison, why are you here? What are you feeding the Harbaughs? It's kind of how I was.
But I guess the question is like how much of an impact does it actually have? Because I do think we tend to overstate the uniqueness of what, how, like, people watch the games. They know what you want to run. Like, yeah. Chip Kelly, yes, he's here and he's changing some things. And Tony Alford definitely got a whiff of that in the short time that they worked together. But like Ryan Day said on Tuesday, like, there's a lot that Chip does that Ohio State has not even gotten close to putting in yet that it will put in by the end of the year or by the end of the spring and throughout the summer and into the fall. So it's not like, you know, Chip Kelly to walk in and pass out like, here's the offense to everybody, and then Tony Alford's taken out with him to Ann Arbor. Like, so
right.
There are probably some things that I actually think it's probably more personnel related. It's like Tony Alford can tell Michigan's coaching staff, like, this guy can't do this, this, and this. Like, if you attack him this way, there's nothing you can do about it, like that kind of stuff. But like in terms of like plays, it's like we all watch the games. We know what plays you're going to run.
I mean, I and Ryan Day basically said that. It's like Ryan Day kind of said the game's in November. We're going to have played 11 games between now and then. You watch them on TV. You have a really good idea. It's not like teams send spies into stadiums or have them on sidelines to try to steal information from people. No. I mean, there's no need to even do that because you can just watch on TV and everything. You learn everything you need to know. So can you imagine? Oh my God, that'd be so funny if a team like had a spy in the stadium. I'm going to go spy on my opponent. Watch all their games. So weird.
Yeah. What? He had like glasses that had a camera in them. That'd be crazy.
What if this is like Scooby-Doo and like at Tony Alford's introductory news conference at Michigan, he's going to pull off his face and he'll be Connor Stallions. He was Connor the whole time.
Possible? Possible. I think it's possible. Non-zero chance. The Tony Alford was Connor Stallions this whole time.
He's a good guy. That's the thing. He develops really good relationship with his players. And I think Tony's like a really good guy. And it's funny, like you said, his grade for here, it's like, I think his grade was like, it's like on his report card, it'd be like 1 year, A. Next year, C minus.
C, yeah.
Next year, A. So it's like, it probably like averaged out to a B. I'm not sure he was ever a B. I think he was either like an A or a C, kind of like, in recruiting and in coaching, right? I mean, because there have been some times when the running back situation at Ohio State has been a little iffy for it being Ohio State. And there have been times when it's like, my goodness, they've got some dudes there. So It was an interesting run for sure.
Yeah, yeah, it was. All right, we'll end that discussion there, I guess. It's fat, like I can't. It'll come back up certainly in November when Ohio State's gearing up for that game. And if we talk to some of the running backs in the spring, we'll certainly talk about that too. And in the meantime, we're waiting to see who Ryan Day hires. But it did kind of feel to me like he expects to have resolution there mm-hmm. by the end of this week. I don't know if that means that person will be on the job next week, but I think we'll have a name by the end of this week, and then we'll see how the timing shakes out there. All right. We'll take a break, and then we come back. I got some offensive line questions for Doug. We'll do that next on Kings of Columbus. Back on Kings of Columbus, I'm Bill. That's Doug. Doug, we're doing a bracket pool. Is that for our tech subscribers? Tell the folks
it's about only, that. It's only the tech subscribers. Yeah, so if you want to get in now, 614-662-4509, get in there, say, hey, I didn't get the bracket, and we'll try to get it to you. But yeah, we decided to do that for the people who are paying extra money.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can prove that you know more about college basketball than we do, which is very easy because we don't know anything about college basketball. And then the winner gets to come on the show. That's the plan, right?
Come on this show, help shape the topic, and yell at us.
Yeah.
Mostly yell at me.
You did that in the past on Buckeye Talk, right? Because we did it on 4-6 with A&B when I was with RE2. It was always fun to have inject a random person there and see where the show would go. So if you want to do that, become a tech subscriber. Yeah. Join the I guess you don't have much time because the tournament starts on Thursday. But if you want to quickly sign up, sign up and shoot us a text and say you want to do it, and maybe we can send out one more reminder like Thursday morning or something to let people know about it. All right, I have offensive line concerns.
Oh, you're concerned. I'm interested.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Here's the thing: I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth here because I have said on dailies and snap judgments, and I think on the show too, that I think it is perfectly reasonable and possible that the answer to Ohio State finding its best offensive line, like the answers are already on the roster. But I thought there would be more of a comprehensive / open search for those answers within the roster. And now I kind of feel like there's not. I kind of feel like they just want Josh Fryer to be the right tackle and Luke Montgomery to be the right guard. And I don't know how much competition is actually going to be there based off what Ryan Day said on Tuesday. When I asked him about, I said, like, I'm just trying to figure out what you guys are thinking about the right side of the offensive line. And he expanded upon like Josh Fryer having a really good offseason. They want him to carry that through these 15 practices. They really want him to take that tackle job. And I don't know how much they're going to look at him at guard. And I don't know how much they're going to look at Luke Montgomery at tackle. And I don't know how much of a look Tegra Chabot is going to get if both those two guys ahead of him are kind of locked into those spots. So I'm a little, I guess I'm like concerned about the process. Not necessarily that it'll yield bad results, because I think we do need to give guys a little bit of space to like show that they can actually improve. And when I say that, I am talking about Josh Fryer. But I thought the best path toward Ohio State, like finding its best five, was to basically just like open the door for anybody to go win the job on the right side of the offensive line. And now I feel like they're not doing that. Do you think I'm overreacting?
You did not take the read away from Day as it's Luke Montgomery versus Tegra Tshabola, and depending who wins will determine where Fryer plays. That Luke Montgomery is competing at guard, Tegra Tshabola is competing at tackle, and Fryer will play the opposite.
I did not take it that way. I think I like that better than my initial reaction to my initial reaction to it was, and part of it was, I asked Ryan Day, do you view Josh Fryer, Luke Montgomery, and Tegra Tshabola as three guys who could play guard or tackle? And he said Josh Fryer and Luke Montgomery, yes, could play both, but they view Tegra as more of a tackle.
Yes.
And I don't. I think Tegra's a guard. And like also, when Tegra's played, he's only ever played guard. The last 2 years when he's played, he's only ever played guard. So like I've taken that as Ohio State also thinks he's a guard. So maybe that's just like my priors coming into play. I think Tegra could play tackle, but I think he is much better suited to be a guard. And I think he will be a guard at the next level when he gets there. So that to me, like kind of like threw the whole thing out of sorts for me. But if the way you just spun it is like the actual way of it, that is a little more palatable for me, I think.
Yeah, I took it more as if it's Tegra and Josh, we think the better lineup is Fryer at guard and Tegger at tackle. If it's Luke and Josh, we think the better lineup is Luke at guard and Josh at tackle. And Josh can play either. Josh has had a great offseason. Josh is going to start. But that Josh's position will be determined more by the winner of the other two, which is a maybe, I don't know if it's an equal competition, but I thought it still sounded open. So, what makes you think a guy is a guard versus a tackle? Is it just length? Is it like wingspan and height? They have enough of that, they're a tackle. And if they're not, they don't, they're a guard. How does athleticism factor in? How do you consider it?
Yeah, it's not like athleticism is probably too broad of a term because, like, I don't know, Wyatt Davis is really athletic, but I don't know that he could play tackle, right? So I think it's length, yes. And I think it's like foot speed slash like ability to like mirror really speedy pass rushers, right? Like, I think that's where Josh Fryer to me got into some trouble, is like when the guy across from him was just like faster than him. And granted, you know, most really good defensive ends are faster than most really good defensive tackle or offensive tackles. But, you know, it's the anticipation and short area quickness, maybe to not get beat with speed all the time, that I think kind of separates whether or not you are a tackle or a guard. Cause like, clearly you can be a guard and run a like really good 40 for a big man and, you know, pull and get out in space and look really athletic. So it's not like one position's athletic and one position's not. But when I look at Tegra and when I look at Josh Fryer, I see more like powerful, heavy footed guys as opposed to like Luke Montgomery, who granted is not as big as either of the other two, but maybe is a little more nimble. And I think like I can see him playing tackle more than I can see the other two.
So that's where I go back and forth with nimbleness, because that's my instinct as well, right? More of a big guy, road grader, you're a guard, good feet, a little quicker, you're a tackle, you can deal with pass rushers. But you and I have been discussing Guardapalooza for on a decade now. And this was back when we were at Cleveland.com and like the Buckeyes had good guards and the Browns had good guards. And we were going to do a whole thing about like the athleticism of guards and being able to get out and pull and all that kind of stuff. And it continues to percolate. But under that idea, then I sometimes think, yes, like who's the most athletic of Luke Montgomery, Josh Fryer, and Tegra Tshabola? Luke Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And that's why he should play guard, because they want to get him out. Because we've talked about this. There have been times, right? Pat Elflein, right? Billy Price, maybe Wyatt Davis. Like when they had some guards who were like, ooh, watch that guy get out and lead and pull on a play. That's an athlete. And if that's what they want Luke to be, it does feel of those three, he's best suited for that. So maybe his edge in athleticism is why they want him to be a guard. And then they just hope that Tegra or Josh is like long enough, like with DeJuan Jones, right? Just get your hand on a guy, push him wide, even if your feet aren't great. So sometimes like I go back and forth, but that's where I've landed maybe in this circumstance on the athleticism actually leads Montgomery inside as to outside. And I've also thought about the idea on Kings of the North when we are going to do, we're hoping, you know, to have players on during the season and stuff. We've talked about, I think we should have a segment every week. I thought we could call them like the Dancing Bears of the North, where we pick out, we meaning you, pick out a particularly athletic play by an interior offensive lineman, where a guy gets out and moves like a big, like a 320-pound guy with some feet. And then we try to have him on the show. And we talk about like these athletic interior guys. It's an extension of Guardapalooza. Maybe we just call it Guardapalooza. But like in that world, it's like, oh, maybe we'll have Luke Montgomery on Kings of the North, right? So are you conflicted about that sometimes on what athleticism means when you're trying to decide whether a guy should be at guard or tackle?
Yeah, I am. And I think part of it is like scheme specific too, which is like a point that Ryan Day made, like and kind of like set this whole conversation in motion on the first day of spring practice when we saw Luke with the guards. And then I can't remember who asked about, I think it would have been Dan Hope maybe from 11 Warriors, who asked about Luke Montgomery playing right guard. And Ryan in the midst of his answer, said, like, with some of the schemes we'll be running this year, we like the idea of Luke playing guard. And, like, that got my antennas up because I'm curious about where the scheme is going. And again, on Tuesday, he said, like, this run game is going to look a lot different. So, like, I'm really excited about that. And I think it makes perfect sense. He might want the more athletic guy playing guard. I would worry slightly about, like, Luke Montgomery, I think, is listed as, like, 305, and he kind of looks like he's more like 290. Like, he's not skinny, but he's not 320 pounds either. And I do wonder about, like, anchoring against, like, 300-plus pound defensive tackles and stuff like that. I think mostly, though, I want Luke Montgomery to play tackle and guard, and there's only one of them. So I think maybe that's my biggest issue at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. A year ago, when we had the tackle freakout preseason show, I was more freaking out about. No, who was I freaking out about?
You were freaking out about Josh Simmons.
Yeah. And then, like, Simmons, right, with the athleticism, and he did kind of make the adjustment from the Mountain West and maybe wasn't great, but was showed more things. And mm-hmm. Fryer started out good and then maybe tailed off in the second half of the year. There is a part of me, like, for a place like Ohio State, where it's like, hey, your tackles were, like, I guess serviceable last year. So what's the plan? Run it back. It's like, okay, well, like that, yeah, they're better. That maybe that shouldn't be the plan. Is that part of it for you at all? That, like, for real, like, the offensive line, I think we're also trying to figure out if you have a veteran center as opposed to a young center, how much does that change the whole entire offensive line as well? Yeah. But, like, if this comes back, I was going to say, but it'll be two new starters. Because, right, what's Hinsman going to do? Hinsman's not going to start, right? Is he going to be the swing interior guy, sixth guy?
I think that is his best case scenario. Unless they get to the summer and think, like, we got to play him at right guard, but I don't. Okay. When I asked Ryan David the right side of the offensive line, he did not mention Carson Hinsman's name. Yeah. So,
okay. So, yeah, like, does this keep you on alert for post spring portal tackle?
No, I don't know if any more alert than I would have been already. Like, I was, like, semi on alert, I suppose. Maybe less so than last offseason, but still thinking that they'll at least take a look at what could become available after spring practice. I don't know. I'm not as concerned about the offensive line now as I was going into spring, like last spring. And I think part of that is, like, you make a good point about the center position, like having a veteran guy in there who, like, knows how to handle stuff, I think is really important. I just get a little, I don't know. Worried is probably too strong of a word, but it catches my attention when it seems like the plan going into the spring is one thing, and then spring football starts, and that's not really what the plan is. Uh-huh. So, like, I'm just wondering kind of about, like, their thought process on things and if it's going to yield the best results.
Yeah, no, it's certainly not settled, and I over time have perhaps oversubscribed to the theory of if they're saying good things about a player, it means he's not playing that well and he needs to be puffed up. And if they're, like, saying bad things about a player, it means that they're worried about him getting a big head. So, like, yeah, you know, when they're like, Josh Fryer had a great spring, it's like, did he? You know, a great offseason. It's like, are they trying, like, to pump up a guy that they are realizing, like, probably one way or the other must start, and they want him to feel happy and confident? Or did he actually kick butt for the last couple months? And so I'm not trying to take anything away from Josh Fryer, but sometimes when I'm trying to read between the lines, I can fall into a trap of, like, oh, they're praising Josh Fryer. That's terrible news, which actually probably is not fair.
Do you think if spring ball ends, and I guess, like, the word on the offensive line is, like, we liked what we've seen, but we're not 100% sure on positions just yet. We're not going to add anybody. We're just going to carry this into the summer and figure out the positions then. Would you be okay with that? Or do you think, like, if they don't know who their starting right tackle is at their 15 spring practices, they have to go at somebody?
Boy, that's a tough question. right? Confusion's from strength versus confusion from weakness. So yeah. If it's like, hey, like if it's Luke Montgomery, Tiger Shibola, and Josh Fryer all look great in the spring and we just don't know how it's going to work out, then I think you'd be okay. If it's like, oh, we still need to know, then you'd probably want to add somebody. I mean, it makes you wonder, right? The idea of people think this team can win a national championship. We had a discussion. I had a discussion by myself last week about like, could this be the greatest team in Ohio State history? So sometimes when things are coming together and things are happening, it's like, don't you think it's possible that like an All-American might just drop in the portal? Like the day after spring football ends and it'll be like, oh, it's him. Like another Caden Proctor just like falls out of the sky. Is like, ah, I'm sick of Brian Kelly at LSU. I'm good. Let's go win a national title at Ohio State. Like that, there's a part of me, like I'm probably not going to let go of that until the next portal window closes.
Yeah, I don't think I will either. And it's like we waited for it to happen last year and it didn't happen. Like there was not a All-American caliber tackle who decided after spring practice that he was going to go elsewhere. I don't think there was. It also seemed like Ohio State had like made up its mind on Josh Simmons like in the middle of spring with like nothing was announced until after spring practice either.
Yeah.
So
Justin Fry was like, I got a guy.
Yeah, like he was just kind of like waiting. I there's nobody out there, at least that I'm aware of, that like hasn't committed somewhere that Ohio State like might have cooling just in case, but I don't know. Well, I'm still willing to keep an open mind. I just thought like, and listen, there's still a lot of spring practice left too. Like Tuesday was the third practice of the spring. Yeah. It was the first time they had pads on. I remember it was summer camp. It wasn't spring practice. I guess it would have been 3 years ago where like we had one idea of what the offensive line was going to be. And then we went out there a week later. It was like Thayer Mumford's playing guard. I'm like, okay. So like things change quickly to figure out the best five. So what Ryan Day says after spring practice 3 is not necessarily what it's going to look like if we get to watch spring practice 11. So we'll see where it goes. I thought there was a chance like I would ask that question on Tuesday and Ryan Day would be like, last year wasn't good enough. We're going to play guys all over the place. We're going to make sure we find the right answers. And it was more of like, no, we're going to try to run it back mostly and see if we can get Luke Montgomery to just replace Matthew Jones. Like, okay. All right.
I also will never get over the fact that Ohio State once upon a time had so many tackles. They played Paris Johnson at guard.
Yeah.
And ever since that year, it's been like, do they have any more tackles? Like, can you imagine if like, well, Ryan, how do you think it's going to shake out? It's like, well, we've got this sophomore Paris Johnson. We think he has a chance to be Paris Johnson on one leg would be the starting right tackle right now for this team as a sophomore. Right. So as a freshman, Paris Johnson was here as a true freshman. Paris Johnson, who competed with Nicholas Petit-Frere to be the starting right tackle, right, and did not win the job and was a backup.
Mm-hmm.
True freshman Paris Johnson will be the starting right tackle for Ohio State. True or false?
True.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah.
He started a tackle for 1 year here. He was a top 10 pick in the draft 1 year. Oh, it's like one of those. If he was born 2 years later, slots right in.
Yeah.
Can't
change that, unfortunately. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball. And I don't necessarily have a take here. I just want to know how the quote landed in your ears as the guy who has been an ardent supporter of Kenyatta Jackson and what he can become. So Ryan Day was asked about Kenyatta Jackson, was reminded that I think it was last spring that he said, like, Kenyatta Jackson's an NFL player. And which I think like got you really excited in the first place. And like that did not come to fruition last year. So Ryan was asked about it again on Tuesday and I found the answer kind of interesting. I won't like read the whole thing, but he said, I'll read this part. We believe in Kenyatta, and when Kenyatta is believing in himself and he's positive, boy, he can be one of the best players on the field. And then he talked a lot about like consistency and like having to have the guys in the room kind of like rally around Kenyatta and like build him up and like give him the confidence to know that he can be a great player. Which I kind of took as like, they see it, they don't see enough of it, but there's hope that like, maybe this is the spring that it clicks and like the breakout we were kind of waiting for last year might actually happen this year. But I also could see the other side of it where like you hear that and you start to worry a little bit about like, is it ever going to actually click? So I'm like wondering maybe on which side of the scale you ended up on hearing what Ryan Day said about Kenyatta on Tuesday.
Yeah, right. So Urban's the one who said, and I have stuck to it ever since, like the first 2 years are on the coaches, the third year is on the player, right? So
yeah,
it's third year for Kenyatta. But whenever I hear stuff like that, all I think is, that's coaching. Oh, you have a good player who needs support and encouragement and needs to be consistent. Oh, I wonder what you could do. Could you coach him? So like, to me, like that's the whole thing. The guy's got the tools. He doesn't know how to use them. And by the way, he's been absolutely blocked by five stars. And there are times in situations like this where I fear that coaches can let, perfect be the enemy of good, right? Mm-hmm. That it's like, oh, well, you know, Kenyatta really needs to be better against the run, or, oh, he's a little, it's like, could you maybe get him on the field 25 snaps a game and let him try to go tear a quarterback's head off? Like, would that be so wrong? Yes, maybe he'll take a wrong step on one play. All right, maybe he'll get out of his gap and they'll pop you for a 12-yard run. Okay, Sonny Styles will make the tackle behind him. It's okay. But could you find a way to take what he does well and use it? It's his third year.
Right.
So, like, I don't like conversations like that. Like, I don't, like, it. Like, what is it? So again, so they're trying to light a fire. I get it. But bringing out the best in a talented young individual is literally what they get paid for. These guys don't show up as finished products. He's a long way from home, man. Right? And maybe, like, it's just one of the things. Jack Sawyer's from right down the road. Like, JT Tuimoloau is just, like, I think an extremely mature individual, right? Kenyatta Jackson, I think, probably just like a normal kid from Florida who came up here and, like, has not gotten on the field for 2 years. Coach him up.
Yeah.
Find what he does well and use it. So I'm happy that he's here. Once Jack and JT announced they were staying for this season, I would have, you know, it's like, well, I was at, well, one of the costs of that is going to be that Kenyatta Jackson is going to leave. Because how can Kenyatta Jackson live in a world where he's at Ohio State for 3 years and doesn't play? Right? That's ridiculous. I think with some of the natural ability that guy has. So, you know, if a guy's like not doing what he's supposed to do and he doesn't make it, then I get that that's on the player. But if there's no indication of that, and it's just like maybe a guy who just needs a little bit of a lift in order to use his infinite skills, then I think there's like millions of dollars of paychecks in that building to make that happen. So make it happen. Like, yeah, make it happen. And like, and again, to run down, this is even like, I mean, to compare him to like Baron Browning, who they never used correctly, right? I mean, Baron Browning was on the field a ton more than Kenyatta Jackson's been on the field so far, and obviously different positions, but I just like a guy, like a talented guy that's like, what are you doing? So I just thought when he said that last year and some of the brief looks we got in practice, he bends the edge, I think, differently than anybody else on this roster. He bends the edge like an NFL guy. He has that pass rusher flexibility that I think Jack and JT are just different types of players. So like how that's not part of a Rushman package this year, would I be dumbfounded? Get JT inside, get Jack and Kenyatta on the edge, and like, let's see what we're going to do here. So I'm frustrated by the comment today, I think, in the end.
I thought you might be, which is why I wanted to bring it up. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm probably erring on the side of like, oh, I think this means that they like he's like ready to finally do it this year. But then you ask yourself like where is the opportunity going to present itself based off how they used the defensive line last year? It's like, and we've talked about this, right? Like I felt last year like there was an overcorrection to too much defensive line rotation that came at the expense of guys like Kenyatta Jackson playing more than they should have. And I hope that they notice that too, so that doesn't happen this year. And Kenyatta and Caden Curry and, you know, Hero Canoe and Katie McDonald, all these young defensive linemen can play a little more, because I think if you're going to win a national championship and an expanded playoff, you're going to need more than four defensive linemen who know how to play and know how to play well. But I also wonder, like, if, like, for guys like Kenyatta and Caden Curry, like, if do you almost like do too much damage already? And I'm talking about like confidence. Like, it's not, I don't think it's a skill set issue. Like, it's your, like what you said, like, I don't think it's he doesn't have the talent to play at Ohio State. I don't think it's he doesn't handle his business in every other aspect to get on the field. I think it's kind of what Ryan Day said, which seems to be like, the confidence in your own ability to develop the consistency as a player that Ohio State is looking for. But I don't know, like, is confidence a thing that like must come from the player only? Like, to your, like, I think it's on the coaching staff, right, to like kind of build that up and foster it. Is it not? And maybe, I don't know, maybe they've not done a tremendous job of doing that by, I don't know, limiting opportunities for guys like Kenyatta.
And that's one of those where, I mean, I think there are some guys that are easier to coach. Like, is it that hard to coach JT Tuimoloau, right? Like, he's just ready to go, and he acts like he's 25. Is it hard to coach Jack Sawyer, who's from down the street and has wanted to be a Buckeye since he was 1 year old? I did a story, like, and it feels like not that long ago, but it's a very long time ago now, that, like, Larry Johnson, when he was at a point that's like, maybe would he think about retiring? The idea of the story was like Tyquan Lewis was the guy that sort of like Larry Johnson was waiting around for. Like, and he's from North Carolina, Kenyatta's from Florida, but like a guy from the South, a little bit far away from home, who kind of needed somebody. And Larry Johnson helped mold Tyquan Lewis into a Big Ten defensive lineman of the year and a second round pick and an NFL player. Right. And so, but that was a while ago. And so this is one of those, again, it's like, this is the real nitty gritty coaching stuff where, and again, I think for instance, I think Tony Alford was very good at this kind of thing. Like, there's a guy in your room who's talented, who's maybe not getting on the field, and I'm going to put my arm around him. I'm going to get in his ear and I'm going to tell him how we're going to make it okay and why I believe in him and why I'm here for him. And I'm not saying Larry Johnson isn't doing that, but I'm saying that's a requirement at a place like this. And so whatever's happening, if they're talking about a world where, like, where we haven't seen everything Kenyatta Jackson can be, then if that's not happening, then coaching has to be part of the reason. So I hope it happens. And this probably deserves a deeper investigation. So people coming later this week on Kings of the North, our second show this week on Kings of the North will be our second mega spring preview. And Ohio State was part of our first spring preview because they started spring practice earlier. Michigan's part of the second spring preview. So I was going through all the teams and I was going through all the snaps from Michigan last year. Michigan played like 16 or 17 guys on defense, like practically the same amount. They use so many guys on the defensive line. They use multiple linebackers. They use multiple safeties. They really had a depth of guys that they had like 17 defensive players that mattered. And I think last year, Ohio State had like 13 defensive players that mattered, right? Mm-hmm. So there's something to be learned from that. And I think it would help Ohio State this year. And I don't know that we've had this huge conversation yet. 16 game playoff, like that's an extra like 6 weeks of football.
Yep.
You're going to need it even more. So they have to play more guys. And as you said, it kind of swung too far the other way. Everybody thought Larry Johnson played the backups too much. Now last year he didn't play him at all. They have to get Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry involved for the good of the player, for the good of the team, and to make sure that Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau don't drop over from exhaustion in the national title game.
Yeah, there's a way, because there's a question I think that needs to be asked of Ryan Day and Larry Johnson and probably Jim Knowles too. But I think that question like needs to come with data. So like I think you need to like tell them like, hey, you guys were the only team in the Power Five that played, you know, four defensive linemen 500 plus snaps or whatever. Like, and I don't, I'm making that up sort of on the top of my head, but I also wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. So like a comparison of how much Ohio State played its top four defensive linemen last year compared to whatever the teams in playoff contention, the top 15 teams in the country, like. I think they have to be an outlier in how much they relied on a select handful of guys. And I do think it impacted them at the end. Like, I think like the end of the Michigan game getting run on a little bit, you know, at the end of the Cotton Bowl getting run on a little bit. Like, you can only hold up for so long, I think, when you're playing defensive linemen in particular that many snaps. So I think it's like a necessary component of Ohio State's championship push this year. It's like they have to have good defensive line depth, but then they have to play it. It can't just be there and talk about something down the road that's going to be good for the program. Like, it has to be good for the program this year. So, and I think those are questions maybe we can ask later on in spring to get a better idea of how they're feeling about that. Let's take another break. We'll come back. We'll talk about special teams, talk about Jim Tressel, and then we'll do what you watch and what you eat and what you're thinking on Kings of Columbus. We're back on Kings of Columbus. Doug, the name of Jim Tressel was invoked on Tuesday. And you, like, you know, you are the man who put out into the world Jim Tressel, like, culture coach for Ohio State, mm-hmm. especially in this world where, like, you know, the Michigan rivalry has turned in the wrong way for Ohio State. We're not getting Jim Tressel culture coach. We are getting, like, Jim Tressel special teams influencer for Ohio State. Ryan Day on Tuesday, special teams influencer. Is that a way to make money? I don't know.
Is that like on TikTok? It's like, TikTok. Oh, I'm a special teams influencer.
Just talk punting on TikTok. Right. So this is the first year that Ryan Day does not have someone on his staff with a special teams designation. The first couple of years, Matt Barnes was like a defensive backs coach / special teams coordinator. Obviously, Parker Fleming was a special teams coordinator the last few years, no longer on the staff. And there is no special teams anything on this current staff. So the plan is for James Laurinaitis and Matt Guerrieri to, like, coach the kick and punt teams. Brian Hartline and Keenan Bailey to coach the kick return teams. Ryan Day sort of involved with all of it. And there's a Rob Keyes, who's like an analyst, who's going to do like a lot of the dirty work in terms of like cutting up film and organizing things for meetings, because all those guys I mentioned also have to coach their own positions. But it's a very different approach to special teams than what Ryan Day has done previously at Ohio State. And it seems like a lot of it, Doug, was influenced by a conversation he had with Jim Tressel in the offseason. Ryan Day said he talked with a few people about the right direction, best practices for special teams after they moved on from Parker Fleming. And a conversation with Jim Tressel in particular resonated with him. And you can tell me, I guess, because you covered Jim Tressel teams, I didn't. How similar is this dynamic to what Ohio State did under Jim Tressel? And then I guess just like sort of generally what you think of Jim Tressel having an influence of some kind on the way that Ohio State's going to go about its special teams business this year.
So as soon as you brought up the name Jim Tressel, it made me mad that I had not been on the bandwagon of hire Jim Tressel as the actual special teams coach, like Parker Fleming yeah. out, Jim Tressel straight in special teams coach. God, that would have been some shows. I think my opinion of how special teams should be coached is based on what I covered here under Jim Tressel. So like I have typically railed against a full-time special teams coach because I think it should be divided up. And it's because that's what Jim Tressel did. And I was trying to look it up. I couldn't find it. They had like different names for the four units, right? Kick, cover, punt, return, kick, return. I think one was the Rangers, but like they would have, I don't know if they were all like special forces kinds of names, but they were divided up exactly like that. And I think it makes everything Ryan Day said today, it makes the guys play harder because it's not some 10th special teams coach who's like barely a coach. It's your position coach who's coaching your unit. So you're more invested in that. And it just spreads it out through the staff. And I think it's almost like two opposite things at once. One is, if special teams matters, then full-time coaches who coach position groups should be involved in it. Like it shouldn't be shuffled off to like the 10th guy. But also, I think special teams, the importance, how much it affects the game has been diminishing and diminishing and diminishing, yeah. right? With the kick game and the fair catches and all that kind of stuff. And so, because it's important, you should spread it out through the staff. But also, because it doesn't matter that much, you should spread it out through the staff. One is sort of like the perception that you value it. And the second is, it's just not worth it with how much special teams is involved in the game these days to have one person dedicated to it. Parker Fleming didn't have enough to do. He did not have enough to do. So I like all of it, and it really makes sense. This is what you have to do, right? So 10-person staff, you're not making the coordinators coach. So that's two out. There's eight left. The offensive line coach and the defensive line coach aren't going to be involved, right? So they're out. So there's six coaches left. So then you take the four least experienced of those two coaches and say you're coaching special teams. You have one unit. And that's exactly what they did. So Tim Walton doesn't have a unit. Tim Walton's old. And the running backs coach is going to come in and replace Tony Alford, doesn't have a unit. But the four youngest people on the staff all have a unit. And the two defensive guys are in charge of coverage. And the two offensive guys are in charge of returns. And it makes total sense. The only thing I don't think they have that I think they should have, because Rob Keyes, who's the special teams guy that you mentioned, was a former University of Findlay head coach, I believe, because I was looking him up the other day. I don't think he was a kicker. I think they should have a kicker in the building.
Yeah, he is like his title is like quality control kicking, but I think you're right. I don't believe he was a kicker.
So like all the people that they employ, I think it's a little odd that they don't employ a kicker. It doesn't mean that you have to have played the position to coach the position, but Brian Hartline was a receiver and Ryan Day was a quarterback. And like, you know, James Laurinaitis was a linebacker and, you know, a lot of guys, that is how it happens. I think it's a little odd when it comes down to that. When it comes down to a team that missed a field goal that frankly would have won them a national championship, I'd have a kicker in the building as an analyst.
I wonder how many teams do. Right. That's been like an ongoing conversation. Like, I don't think you want to pay someone, but you don't want one of your 10 assistants, like a kicking specialist.
Right.
But I don't know how many teams even have a kicking specialist in the building. Like, there are times where we go to Ohio State practice and like the punter's like outside doing their own thing. It's like, who's coaching these guys?
And I don't even know that it's for, I just like they should have like a mental coach, right? Just like, what do you have to do? So I don't know. So like but I'm all humble. I'm all about this. I think it is the right decision. And I think they'll be fine, but it's a better use of staff resources across the board. And it also gets Ryan Day a little bit involved. It's so much better. How much better? It's like 100 times better.
It's way better.
Than like, we have an interview with Parker Fleming. How's the holder?
Yeah, right.
Getting good hold? Is the holding good? How's the long snapping? Is he snapping it to the guy? Is it a crisp snap? Is the snap crisp? Also, remember how your unit lost them games single-handedly? How was that? So, I mean, it's just like, it's insane. Special teams coach. Are you kidding me? And again, to have a special teams coach who's not a special teams expert. Right. Oh, but yeah, I thought it was great. But are you also implying that Ryan Day should and or will call Jim Tressel more? And it starts off by talking about special teams. And then Tress is like, you know, now that we've ended our special teams discussion, let me tell you what I used to do Michigan week, right? Like that.
Yeah, no, for real. Like I don't know, like putting myself in Ryan Day's shoes. Like, it's a unique situation to like take over for Urban Meyer and like be like an Ohio outsider and like try to like cultivate your own thing. So if there was like some hesitancy to like call Jim Tressel to like pick his brain on stuff, like I would almost understand that. But he's going in the year 6. He should be comfortable now in his standing. And I think, you should use that resource. If you have Tressel's phone number and he wants to talk ball and he wants to talk Michigan, absolutely do it.
Tress and Urban both used to have Earl Bruce come in and talk Michigan week. And Jim Tressel, at the very least, Jim Tressel and possibly Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer should be in the Woody talking to the Ohio State football team and firing them up during Michigan week. I don't even think it's disputed. And Tress, when he was here, when they redid the Woody, when like Jim Tressel fundraised and like kind of redid the Woody himself. And I think they're probably about to do like another Woody Hayes Athletic Center renovation. And one of Tress's big things was he had an office for former coaches. He had like an Earl Bruce office and a John Cooper office. Now that Jim Tressel is no longer the president of Youngstown State University, Jim Tressel should have an office in the Woody. He should be invited to come sit in that office whenever he wants to. But during Michigan week, he should be in that office every day. And they can pay him $100 a week to do it. And I am 0% kidding. I am absolutely for serious about this.
Because it doesn't, in my mind, like it doesn't undermine Ryan Day, right?
Ryan Day is an excellent football coach.
It enhances the importance of the week. It's like, it's Michigan week. We're bringing in Jim Tressel.
Because like there are some things, it's not only that Jim Tressel was 9-1 against Michigan, it's that Jim Tressel was born and bred a Buckeye, it's that Jim Tressel drew up loving Rex Kern, is that Jim Tressel's dad was going to go play at Ohio State and then had to go off to the war. It's that Jim Tressel grew up in it in a way that Ryan Day didn't. And it's not for Ryan Day. It's for the players. It's to help the players understand. And if it's 1%, if it's 1% that it helps them play better against Michigan, great. If it's 0%, it helps introduce 20-year-old current players to a guy who won the national championship in 2002 and can tell you Maurice Claret stories And yeah, when he stripped Sean Taylor, and by the way, I was 9-1 against Michigan, and wasn't it crazy? And holy moly, let me tell you about what James Laurinaitis and Brian Hartline were like when they were playing here. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, but I think Jim Tressel should be a part of this program. Not every day, but
yeah,
like an identifiable, possibly on the staff directory when you go to the website. But if not that, he should be in the building Michigan week.
Yeah. It is interesting to me that by far the most visible former coach is John Cooper. He's in there all the time. It's like, can we get the guys who beat Michigan in the building? And like, where you live is where you live, right? John Cooper lives here. Urban and Jim Tressel don't, but maybe not the worst idea in the world to have those guys around for that week in particular.
And I think, and Tress is one of those guys. Tress picks up the phone, right? I mean, like,
especially now.
Tress picks up the phone.
Yeah. He's got nothing else going on. He'd probably jump with a chance.
And the idea, I do think that he has two former players, and more than that, right? There are other guys like staffers and stuff, I think, who played for Tress, but like the James Laurinaitis and Brian Hartline now, who love him, are integral parts of your staff. I just think it should happen. But I just think from a special team standpoint, I think it's the right plan, but I love the phone call, and it makes me wonder how many times has Ryan Day picked up the phone and called Jim Tressel before this for anything.
Yeah. What an incredible resource for Ryan Day, right? Assuming he takes advantage of it. Like, I don't know how often he does either. Tressel has been around some, like he's been at the coaches' clinic a couple times, I think. Mm-hmm. Ryan Day, I think, is part of that when guys like Tress show up for things like that. But yeah, I don't know. Does Ryan Day have like a standing phone call with Tress every week to talk about ball, and should he if he doesn't? I don't.
Would they like it to be a podcast on the podcast network? Talking ball with Tress and Day? Isn't this so weird? Tress Way, right? Tress Way is the actual guy who was an NFL punter. There's a guy named Tress Day. That'd be crazy.
Yeah. Although the Tress Way is basically punting.
I know that feels fake. I think that guy's name was like Roger Silverstein. And then like he was, when he was little, he loved Jim Tressel. And he's like, I'm going to change my name to Tress Way.
The Tress Way. Yeah. Yeah. So no, it was good. I think I also liked, it was inadvertent shade, I think, thrown Parker Fleming's way. But when Ryan Day was like describing the dynamic of having assistant coaches coach special teams, he's like, you know, players really want to impress their position coach, and they want to impress the offensive and defense coordinator and the head coach. And like, you know, when it gets to the special teams coordinator, maybe they care a little less about impressing that guy, so they don't play quite as hard on special teams. Like, yeah, I bet that's true.
But then whenever, don't you want to shout out whenever Ryan Day is talking like that? Just shout out, you hired him.
Yeah. Yes.
Parker Fleming didn't just show up and start going to work. Somebody said, you, here's your paycheck. I pick you. Ryan. Yeah, Ryan, real quick. I've never done this before. It's fine, Parker. It's fine. It'll be fine. Yeah. What could go wrong? Oh, now I feel like, Mike, can we run the montage of special teams mistakes over the last 3 years? What could go wrong?
Let's play, what's that song, Yakety Yakety Sax? Play that in the background. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, great. All right, let's do some what you watching, what you eating, what you thinking here on Kings of Columbus. I don't usually get to tee this up, Doug. You usually tee this up, so we'll start with you.
Yeah,
what you watching?
What am I watching? So there's an author that I like who writes suburban mysteries called Harlan Coben. He's very popular. And then Netflix has made a bunch of his novels into miniseries. So I've been watching them lately. I've read all the books, but I have a terrible memory. So I don't remember what happened in the book. So I can watch the miniseries and not have it spoiled. They have names like Safe, Stay Close, Fool Me Once, I think is the new one that was out this year. But the funny thing about him is when he writes them, he lives in New Jersey, so all the novels are based like in the suburbs of New Jersey, to the point that like Steve Politi, who's the columnist for NJ.com, who we both know, one time in one of the books, he was like somebody was having a news conference. And in the book, he was like, even that bald sports reporter from NJ.com was at the news conference. And I was like reading it. And I like had to like message Steve Politi. I was like, you're in the book. All the miniseries are set in England, though. So it's kind of weird. Yeah, but I think one of the things is like his all his things are like suburban technology. So everybody's like always like doing something on their phone and like whatever the next technological advancement is, he's always like writing about that. So there's CCTV all over the place in England. That's like if you're a criminal, it's like, oh, how are we gonna catch this criminal? It's like, oh, well, the criminal walked past 74 cameras between the house where he burglarized and the bus stop. So let's go to the cameras. So maybe it's that. But he just said, I don't know. Like, I think they have like a team that does it in England. They just do it in England. So I've been enjoying those. I would recommend the Harlan Coben novels. They're like nice, quick mystery reads. And I like them because they're things that are about like, hey, somebody was like the treasurer for the youth soccer team. And then they embezzled money and got murdered. And I'm like, I could do that. Yeah. Like, I like reading things. It's like, oh, yeah, no, I would embezzle from somebody and get murdered. That sounds very realistic to me. So if you're a suburban person just kind of bopping around in your life, I would read the books and or watch all these series on Netflix. But the only thing is, sometimes I say things on here and everybody's like, yes, Doug, we know. And the English, that when they're in Britain for the miniseries, and I was watching another British show, it feels like in British English, all the words that we say with a long A, they say with a short A and vice versa. So it's very annoying. Like there was a different show. They were saying cicada, cicada, cicada instead of cicada. Mm-hmm. The whole time it was driving me crazy. They said cicada 75 times in one episode. And I was like, why isn't this in America? But anyway, if you can get past the differences in how they say their A's, I've been watching the Harlan Coben miniseries all on Netflix.
I have a lot of questions about why they would move it from suburban New Jersey to England.
Yeah. Very similar. Yeah, New Jersey is the England of America. Everybody
very cultured. That is true. Very cultured. What am I watching? We're a big Jeopardy house. Are you a big Jeopardy house?
No, not anymore. I don't want to think.
Really? Oh, that's fair. I like it because it like makes me like for a half hour every day I can think about something that's like not Ohio State football. So yes. So we watch.
Oh, we should do Ohio State football Jeopardy on this show. Good idea. Sorry.
We actually should. Actually, let's write that down. Mike, please make a note of that. It's Tournament of Champions season on Jeopardy, and they've tweaked it in a way that I really like. At least I think they have. I don't want to be wrong on this. I think I'm correct that they had like the celebrity Jeopardy winner as part of the Tournament of Champions. They had like the teen Jeopardy winner as like go through the same competition as everybody else. Normally, it's just like the people who have won like regular Jeopardy are going to be part of it. But the celebrity guy like actually won a couple games. I think it might have gotten to the semifinals. The teen kid, I think, actually did okay in his particular game, even though he didn't win. But the thing that I like most about it, and I believe I have this right, it used to be like the finals were, I think you played two games, and over the course of those two games, just whoever won the most money was the champion.
Yeah.
And now it's a best of seven. They've sportsified it. Yeah. So it's like the three contestants just play, and the first person to win three games is the Tournament of Champions winner. So right now, it also makes me kind of feel like it's rigged because it's like, oh, it's 2-2-1, I think, right now. And it's like, of course, like they're going to go to game seven. Like, of course, right. Like, so, but it does make it more exciting and like stretches it out a little longer. I don't like Tournament of Champions Jeopardy so much because the questions are harder and like, I don't know the answers and I feel less smart. But I do like the new format. As a pretty regular Jeopardy watcher, I like that they opened it up to more people, and I like that they tweak the way that they determine the champion. I think it's a better way to go about it.
My favorite thing about Jeopardy is like when they have like sports categories and they're like, this Baltimore Ravens quarterback is a 2-time NFL MVP. Yeah. And people are buzzing in and saying like Babe Ruth. And it's like, you stupid eggheads.
Moron.
Smart people are weird. Yeah. Have you ever thought about, like, have you ever tried out for Jeopardy or tried to?
I've done the online quiz a couple times. I've never gotten past, like, just doing that. I think my wife did. I think my wife got, like, to the phone interview portion of it one time. But, yeah, I've done it. I don't think I'd do well on it. Like, I do okay sometimes, like, watching it on TV and shouting the answers on my television. But, like in the actual game where I have to, like, do the buzzer and answer in the form of a question, I don't think I'd be very good at it. I would be the guy who, like, keeps not getting things right because I don't answer in the form of a question.
They give you one
of those, and then after that it's like, no, you don't get to keep doing it. So
yeah.
I also miss like Dan Patrick used to host Sports Jeopardy, and it like lasted like 2 years and they got rid of it, and I thought it was really good.
Sports Jeopardy would be good.
Yeah.
They should
bring
that
back. Yeah, what do
we'll
you
bring it back. We'll bring it back. Buy the rights.
That's right. What are you eating?
So you have put frozen pizza in my head so much.
My thing's a frozen pizza thing too. Nice.
That's all you talk. That's all you talk about. Like, and now when I go to the grocery store, I'm just like in the frozen pizza aisle, just thinking of you. I saw the Wisconsin brick cheese pizza the other day, and I was like, "Oh, it exists." He wasn't lying. Well, here's what happened the other day.
Very serious.
I'm at the store, DiGiorno's, buy one get one free. So I got two. I bring them home. But are you? How much do you take into account? Like, do you have room in your freezer for a giant frozen pizza? Like, is that a major consideration for you, or do you have a giant freezer?
It is a consideration. It's less of a consideration because we bought like a separate, when we had the baby, we bought like a separate smaller freezer. So we have more freezer space than we used to, but it's still a consideration. Yeah. Cause those boxes are big and freezers.
Yeah, they are big. We used to have a deep freeze in the basement. And then like for a week, one time we were like coming in our house and be like, man, our house smells weird. Oh, well. And then like we went down to the basement like a week later and the freezer had died and there was just rotten meat everywhere. I was like, oh, maybe we should have figured that out a little bit faster. So we don't have the deep freeze anymore. So I'm always cognizant of like frozen pizza space.
Mm-hmm.
So the other night I buy the frozen pizzas. I think I got a good deal. But then my daughter is like, has a friend over. Is like, hey, can you get us a pizza? So then I'm running out and I just run out and get a Little Caesars. And a Little Caesars pizza is $6.79. And a Little Caesars is not far from my house. It doesn't take up any space in my freezer. It is literally cheaper than a frozen pizza. So when I'm buying a Little Caesars pizza, which I think is a fine quality pizza, especially for the price, it makes me think, why would I ever buy a frozen pizza again when these people are ready to make me a pizza that I don't have to store for less than $7.
I think it's fair.
Do you feel that, frozen pizza guru, or do you actually want a frozen pizza?
So it's complicated because like if it was just me, I think I'd be okay with that. But I don't know that I could get the entire household on board with buying a Little C's. Okay. But I think Little Caesars is pretty good for what it costs, like you said.
Yeah.
There is not one convenient to where I live though.
Okay.
That's also part of it. But I don't besmirch the name of Little Caesars at all. Like, oh, when I had my first job as a sports writer and I was living in Carlisle, Pennsylvania and making $12 an hour, I swung through the hot and ready drive through window quite a bit. So like the holds a spot in my heart for sure.
You know who's gonna love Little Caesars? Your little guy. Just wait. Yeah. You have to ask your wife.
How did he get so big, Little Caesars?
Before he and I can split a Little Caesars for dinner. It's like, you're on your own.
Yeah.
The little guy and I are splitting Little Caesars.
That's right. Mine was a frozen pizza. I took a flight with the Red Baron the other day and it was good. The four cheese Red Baron, which I usually go pepperoni. But we went with the four cheese this time. And it's just, I think it's, if you combine like what it costs and what you get for the cost, I think it's the best value going in frozen pizza. Like there, you can pay a little more to get a little more quality for sure. But if you like, if there are tiers and there's like a Tombstone, DiGiorno, Red Baron kind of tier in terms of price point, Red Baron outshines them all. And it was nice to be reminded of that because I hadn't had one in a while.
So that's one, because sometimes when I'm at the store and thinking of you in the frozen pizza aisle, and I'm looking and I'm thinking, that frozen pizza is $13.79. How is that possible? How can it be worth it? But if we're dancing on the dance floor of like $4 frozen pizzas, then I'm all for it, right? So
yeah,
this feels like something we could do, but I'm also convinced that you and Ari already did it on your show. The pyramid of frozen pizzas based on quality and price, like you already have gone over that. We would be repeating ourselves if we did that.
We have not done that, but I will say this. If we do it, we have to include Ari, because if we don't, they'll come and murder both of us.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay. 28 frozen pizza brands. Here's the pyramid. 4-hour show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I look forward to it. What are you thinking?
So, you know how, do you ever experience this where you think something and then you think to yourself, my God, I'm an idiot. But then you put it in a Google search and it comes up and you realize other people have thought that too, and it soothes you. Oh, yeah. You're not the first dumb person in the history of the world to think that. So I was just thinking, I'd been thinking about this for a while because I've been eating a lot of nuts lately. So I Googled the other.
Mike, click that.
Remember when we used to do like, and that's book 13?
Yeah. That's what I figured.
So I Googled, are nuts wood? Because sometimes I think, aren't I just eating a tree? Oh, what is God. The difference? Couldn't I build a house out of this thing I'm eating? Are nuts wood? And I'm not the first person that ever Googled that because it's out there in the world. And people are like, no, they're not wood. They're seeds of like the fruit of the tree, you idiot. But I was glad that was not the first time that had ever been Googled, are nuts wood? Because sometimes you eat the nut and you think, I'm eating wood. What's the difference between this and chewing on a tree? I'm eating wood.
I've never thought that.
I think it four times a week are nuts wood.
I apologize for people on YouTube who saw my camera moving. Me laughing. I have like auto tracking on my camera and me laughing. My camera followed me and then didn't reset to the right position. So that's why my camera was moving around. Are nuts wood? Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. No, I've never thought that. What was the answer? No.
No. Yeah, it was like people, it was like on one of those like Quora or whatever where like people answer and everybody's answer was like, please someone take this computer away from you for this ridiculous question. But again, somebody else asked it. Wasn't only me.
Yeah. I don't have anything nearly that good about what I'm thinking. So it's like March Madness time. We mentioned we're doing a bracket. Become a Texter, join the bracket. I like didn't cover college basketball this year, like at all, for the first time in, I don't know, 7 or so years. So like I'm kind of flying blind, filling out my bracket, and it feels good. It feels good to not like overthink it. Like I feel like I've tried to like be like, oh, I'm a smart sports writer. I do this for a living. I'm going to put a lot of thought and detail into how I pick my bracket. And my bracket's always terrible. And this year I've not done that. I just went on vibes as I filled it out. And I'm excited to see how that plays out as someone who is now a college basketball dummy.
I don't know. How would I express it? If you compare college basketball and what it was like when I was young and then when you were young, right? I can remember where I was when Christian Laettner hit the shot and that kind of thing. And then even to where Ohio State basketball was 12, 15 years ago and what it is now. I don't want to be myopic, like only through the Ohio State lens, but I don't know that it's a terrible lens. And it's just like, man, it's really quite a different sport. So I actually am a little, it feels a little weird to me, like how few college basketball players I know, right?
Yeah.
That, like that idea of like, even like, I don't know who the Kentucky players are. I don't know who the Duke players are. I don't know who the UConn players are. And part of it is because it's not my job anymore either. So I understand that. But also I felt like, well, once upon a time, even if it wasn't my job, you knew who the 10 best men's college basketball players were. And like, other than Zach Edey, like, I don't know that right now. So, but I know Caitlin Clark. So like, I mean, when everybody was talking, it was like, hey, Caitlin Clark is the most popular college basketball player, regardless of gender. It's like, yeah, no, I, she certainly is to me. So, but I also, on the other end of that, I know much less about the men than I've ever known. I think I watched the women's bracket reveal for the first, I know I watched it. I think it was the first time I ever watched it because I was sort of curious. Part of it was Ohio State. I wanted to see like where Ohio State has a two, what one they got, but also between South Carolina and LSU and Iowa and like some of these teams. It's like, I know more about the women's tournament than I've ever known. And I know less about the men's tournament than I've ever known. And I feel like that is not unique to people around Ohio State, and it's not unique to sports writers.
Yeah, I filled out a women's bracket like for the first time too this year. Like I wanted out of my way to do that because I just like find it more interesting. I don't know. Maybe it is like Caitlin Clark and Ohio State being good. And like obviously I'm still in that sphere even if I don't cover it. But like going through the women's bracket, which like I don't really know anything about women's basketball either. But like the handful of games, like there were a handful of games and filling out the women's bracket. I was like, oh, that's going to be really fun if that happens. Where like the men's bracket is like, I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe Baylor versus Creighton will be a great game, but I know nothing about either of those teams other than who their coaches are. So that was a weird dynamic, but I'm excited for the women's tournament. I actually think Ohio State got a pretty good draw, right? They don't have to, they wouldn't see South Carolina until the national championship. So, and like UConn is like in their region, but UConn's kind of banged up. LSU is also in their region, or is the LSU opposite?
LSU is with Iowa.
LSU, oh, right. LSU, Iowa would be like their final four opponent if Ohio State got that far, I think is how it's set up. Yeah.
And so, as our producer, Mike Krzyzewski, points out, women's final four is in Cleveland. So like the idea that with where women's college basketball is right now, that it's going to be in this state. And people, you know, if you want to go watch Caitlin Clark or South Carolina try to finish off an undefeated season. I mean, if we were doing a draft right now, right, of like best college basketball coaches, you'd take Dawn Staley number one, right? Like, not even joking.
Yeah. I want Dawn Staley to coach the Sixers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, Dawn Staley is awesome. And obviously, Gino Auram is still around. And like, Lisa Bluter at Iowa is like a monster. She's been doing it for 25 years. I mean, I did the show the other day. Like, Iowa State has like a 30-year women's basketball coach who's made the tournament 22 times. Kim Mulkey at LSU, obviously. Like, there's just, there are great coaches on both sides of it, obviously. But yeah, I'm going to be watching some women's tournament games for sure. But yeah, I don't know. And I actually am going to my daughter, as people know, is a student at Northwestern, and she is a huge basketball fan. So we are going to Brooklyn to watch Northwestern in the tournament.
That's where they ended up. And so they're playing at Barclays Center?
Yes, playing at Barclays Center. They play Final Four participant Florida Atlantic in the first round, and the winner gets UConn. So,
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you going to go? Do you have tickets for both sessions? Like, are you going to go no matter what, even if Northwestern doesn't win their first game?
So we're going to go to both sessions on the first day, because the other two big seeds in Brooklyn are Duke and Wisconsin. So we think those will be good games too, but we won't stay for the Sunday game if Northwestern loses.
Have you ever gone to the tournament as a non-media member before?
I took my daughter when it was in Columbus, maybe 6 years ago. I think Grant Williams was playing for Tennessee. That was a good game there. Like, it was, there were some good games. Yeah. Plop her down and let her watch four live basketball games in one day. She could not be happier. Have you done it? Have you gone to a tournament?
Not as a non-media member, no. But like, I've gone, like, the times that I have gone to cover Ohio State, I have like gone to the other session to like watch those games, like on press row, which is like, you know, granted a pretty good seat to watch a basketball game from, but like just to like sit in the atmosphere and watch the tournament. It's really cool. So I don't know. Yeah. People listening are within driving distance of being able. The trade-off is like, you don't get to sit on your couch and watch all the games, like, which is it's no small thing. But if you're able to get to an arena and like sit there and watch four tournament games in one day, it's really cool. So I would recommend it if you can. All right. We'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to Kings of Columbus. Thank you.
You thought with you hosting that we'd go shorter and that I wouldn't shut up. And we went long.
Maybe. I thought we might be like an hour 15. So like not like, a 45 minute show, but you know, a little shorter. So I got time here. I can close this in under 90 minutes.
Nice.
Yep, we got plenty of time. All right. Again, thank you for listening to Kings of Columbus. Thank you for checking out everything we do here on the podcast, whether you watch it on YouTube or follow it in your podcast feed of choice. Ohio State is back into the swing of spring football. Spring practice number 3 was Tuesday. Spring practice number 4 will be on Thursday. We'll be there. We'll have more stuff from that. And then we're building up to the spring game on April 13th. Also remind you, check out Kings of the North. Separate podcast feed, separate YouTube feed. But Doug and I are there as well, talking about all things Northern football, not just Ohio State, as those other programs are going through spring ball as well. We'd appreciate you to check that out. And get on board with what we're doing there. So for Doug, I am Bill Landis. Thanks again for listening. That was Kings of Columbus.